Not the boring, generic, milquetoast stuff coming from the network in Connecticut.
I'd describe him as the best, obviously.
Kettles.
He throws it out there. Speaks his mind. That's cool.
And Rami.
He's supposed to make people laugh. He's just an expert at it.
Kettles and Rami.
Live and local in the afternoon.
Sactown Sports.
Well, Rami, that wasn't good last night.
No.
That was not fun.
No, that wasn't fun.
I mean, from the half that we got to watch.
Yes.
Most of us.
I understand the half we didn't get to watch.
What is going on? The other night it was YouTube TV. Last night it was NBC.
It was everybody, wasn't it?
What is happening?
Last night it wasn't just us YouTube TV folks. It was everyone, right?
So Kelly and I, we were having a conversation last night after dinner. So I didn't get to the DVR until probably, I would say, 2.5 quarters into the game. So I started from the beginning. And I see program not available, whatever the message was. And I'm like, this is like, you know, Groundhog's Day with Bill Murray. This is deja vu.
I couldn't believe it when I turned on my TV.
And so I just start fast forwarding. I'm like, well, maybe they joined it in the first quarter. Maybe the second quarter. Did they get there by halftime? Finally was able to watch the second half of the game. But I guess for us, fortunately, we didn't get to watch the whole game because it was
in disguise.
That was a rough night. There hasn't been many rough nights like that in this season, thankfully, but last night was rough. Surprisingly rough to me. I thought they would win. I thought Domas would play well last night because, as I said yesterday at the end of the show, Toronto doesn't really have one of those beefy centers in the middle. And I thought, hey, this is a night where you kind of put Domas's back to the basket in the paint.
You had to say it, didn't you?
Yeah.
You just had to say it.
Oh, yep. Domas is going to have a great night.
I certainly did not speak that into existence. I did the exact opposite. I spoke it out of existence. I pushed it away.
I think breaking the Kettle's curse gave, you know, you got a little carried away with things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I would agree.
Started popping off.
I would agree.
Right?
Got a little too far ahead
got
of myself
a little
there.
Too lippy.
Yeah. A little too much yapping from these gums. What was I thinking?
Pump that back a little bit.
Exactly.
A little too cocksure, as they say yesterday during the show. So it was a rough night last night for the Kings. Here was Coach Brown after the loss.
They just flat out kicked our ass. Simple. Their length, their athleticism, their switchability, their ball pressure, their physicality sped us up. And we didn't do a great job of handling that.
I think the mic's off. Yeah, this is what happens because I'm in a rush during
mic check.
You know, I'm in a rush trying to make the crossover here work, and my phone's making sound, so I just had to put it on mute. The mic was off.
Excuses.
Obviously,
you
Coach Brown.
Put your phone
Brown,
on silent before you come in?
I try to. Today I did not. Sorry, Rami. I apologize.
I'm just asking.
I did not run through the checklist of 50 things before I get in today. So, look, Mike Brown obviously not mincing words, telling us how he felt about that game, and they got their butt whooped.
I mean, if you were going to nutshell it, there's really no other way to put it than what Mike Brown just said right there. That was... And I said a couple nights ago, the Memphis win, even without Ja and Steven Adams, maybe the most impressed I've been coming away from a Kings game, from a Kings win. Last night, maybe the most unimpressive Kings outing of the entire season. And again, I don't know if I'm just prisoner of the moment and I'm all caught up in the hype and every game is the best or the worst game I've ever seen based on the outcome. But that was from start to finish, at least from what I hear, because I couldn't watch the game. But from start to finish, it was just flat. Like it was the Raptors game from the starting line to the finish line, and that is not a team that should happen against. There are very few teams in the NBA for the status the Kings have reached in my eyes. How good a team I think they are. Where I see a performance like I saw last night, and I just go, hey, man, you ran into a really good team. You know what I mean? But the Raptors are far from that.
I was going to say.
Raptors are far from that.
Not a really good team at all. I mean, they were going in last night, what, 6-7 games, under 500. And what was the most surprising thing about last night's game was obviously the offense. We know the defense has been a train wreck during stretches of this season and overall has not been nearly good enough, you know, somewhere in the mid-20s in defensive rating. So we tend to expect this defense to not be good, Rami, but offensively, they could not do anything last night with the basketball. I mean, Toronto's defense, let's first talk about that because I want to give the Raptors credit. They played a great game defensively. Their hands were busy nonstop in the passing lanes, digging when guys were driving. Their hands were so busy last night, consistently busy. You could tell it was irritating Domas and Foxy all night long. Like, it was just pestering them all night with hands. Their length. They don't have a big beefy guy in the middle, as I said, not your prototypical old school kind of Jonas Valanciunas back in the day, but they have tons of length. And those guys are athletic, and they're long, and they're busy, and they're physical, and they're just constantly in your face.
Yeah. You know what it reminded me of, Nick? They kind of gave Sabonis the Giannis treatment. And Toronto has been one of the teams, and whether they've been, you know, going back to when they were an Eastern Conference power to what they are now, they're one of those teams that kind of always gave Giannis and the Bucks some problems and matchup problems. And they gave Domas the same type of treatment last night, man. And I don't know if we can just – can we just chalk that up as Domas was due for a stinker? Because, I mean, he's been on
– look, we'll get to Domas.
Such a run.
We'll get to Domas a little bit later in depth. But, yeah, I mean, I would say that everybody is going to have a game that is going to be a little bit of a hiccup. I would not go too far with anything from last night's game because, honestly, Rami, some of this is Toronto and their length and how deep they are with that length. But it's also just some of the simple stuff, like – you know, pressure and physicality is going to bother teams from time to time. But really, the simple stuff like playing against a zone caused some issues. And I thought that Fox and Domas, they tried to dribble through traffic way too often. They tried to dribble through, you know, double teams. They tried to dribble through that length. They tried to dribble through all of those hands. And I mentioned it yesterday. The one thing I did get right about this game yesterday, Rami, when we talked about it, the idea that Toronto feasts on turnovers. They had 19 turnovers. Kings had 19 turnovers last night. You can't turn over the ball that much against that team.
And 17 points off of turnovers. And another couple of things. And stop me if you've heard this one before, Nick, like in every Kings loss. Because if you look at a couple of statistics, field goal percentage, they shot almost 48%.
Yep.
Toronto was 49.5%. A three-point, they smoked Toronto in three-point percentage. They shot 40% from the three. Toronto shot just 30%. But then you look at rebounds. They get out-rebounded 41-34. Points off, or second-chance points, 18-2.
Yep.
18-2 Toronto outscored the Kings in second-chance points. You look at bench scoring. Kings got smoked there as well. You got a combined 23 points on 7 of 23 from Lyles, Monk, Mitchell, Metu and Rashawn Holmes. You're not going to, and we keep on pointing to these things, Nick, things that you can consistently point to in Kings losses, and you can go, like, I can bet you they lost in rebounds. I can bet you they lost in points in the paint,
yep.
Second chance points,
yep.
And more often bench points.
Yep. 58-42 points in the paint last night. Again, so you're minus 16 in the paint, you're minus 16 in second chance points, you're minus 7 in rebounds. You turned it over 19 times, minus, 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 lots of turnovers. I tweeted last night at Nick C Radio, if you've seen this team lose this season, a lot of these losses look the same. It does have the same old feel. I also thought, interestingly enough, that Toronto had more urgency last night. You know, we go back to Monday night's game, and I said the Kings found that urgency in the third quarter, and that took that game in a different direction against Memphis. And you could see it. It was palpable when the Kings found that urgency and they really forced themselves upon the Grizzlies. Last night, it was the complete opposite. I thought Toronto showed the urgency. I thought Toronto forced the action upon the Kings. And I thought the Kings, they were losing out on 50-50 balls. They were not scrappy as much as they should have been through the whole 48 minutes. And so Toronto's a team. You know, when you're the Kings, you're in the position of the Kings, right? You're sitting there last night, what, 8 games above 500. You're the 3 seed in the Western Conference, even though, as I heard Deuce earlier today, we've talked about this, the Western Conference is still close. So the 3 seed, it's not like you have a 10-game lead on the 6 seed. But you're the 3 seed. You've been playing good basketball. I think the Kings have won, like, what was it, 8 out of their last 10 or whatever it was. You have to understand in that moment, you're facing a team in Toronto that needs to win. And they're 6 games below 500. And all the rumors are Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby are on the trade block. And mm-hmm. Masai Ujiri is going to do something. That team last night, played like a team that was fighting for its life together, and the Kings played like the team, you know, we're three seed, we'll be fine.
I was doing the crosstalk with Deuce and Mo, and Mo brought up sort of that human element, Nick, of the Kings about to start a seven-game road trip, looking at the Raptors and seeing a team that's in 10th place in the Eastern or 12th place in the Eastern Conference, six games under 500 coming into the night. Sort of a combination between a trap game in terms of looking at the competition and thinking, ah, we got this. Let's look ahead at what's coming. And also, you know, what can happen to anybody when you're about to go on a long road trip or a long work trip. You know what I mean? Your mind might not be in the present moment as much as you'd like. These are human beings at the end of the day, and they can fall into the same sort of mental traps or tendencies that any one of us can. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's what happened last night, but that might explain that difference in the urgency and intensity of the two teams that you're talking about.
Coaching staff has to be frustrated. I have to imagine that, you know, some of this at this point is personnel. Coaching staff is well aware of what we're talking about. Points in the paint, second chance points, turnovers, all those things. They're well aware of that, right? They understand. I'm sure they've told the players a bunch of times, hey, guys, look, this is what's killing us, right? What's killing us is rebounding. What's killing us are the turnovers. When we lose, this is what hurts us as a team. But they've been incapable of correcting some of those things so far. So is it some of the personnel? We'll have to see, and we'll have to see if Monty feels like he's got to address some of these things before the trading deadline. Well, 916-339-1140 is the text line, the phone number. Phone lines are open for you if you want to talk about that loss last night by the Kings to the Raptors. 1-800-920-1140 is the phone number. Also, check us out on YouTube, youtube.com, Sacktown Sports 1140. Yes, we have new angles. I don't know if Rami's posture is great with this angle right now. You gotta think posture, Rami.
Why did it look better with Jason in the morning? I don't understand why we can't get this right on Cattles and Rami.
Maybe it's a Jason thing.
Why does it feel like it was more zoomed in on Jason this morning than it is on me? Because my posture really comes through when it's as zoomed out as it is right now.
Well, you can check that out. YouTube.com, Sacktown Sports 1140 when you swing by. Don't forget to give us the thumbs up.
I don't want people seeing my bad posture.
Very little effort from you gives us some big-time help against YouTube. Get more eyeballs watching the brand. And, of course, as we say, 6A to 6P now.
Back to the other angle.
12 hours of local coverage. YouTube.com, Sacktown Sports 1140. We'll get to your Kings reaction also in 90 seconds. De'Aaron Fox had a weird night.
Cattles and Robbie. Cattles and Robbie.
Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports goes 100% live and local.
From 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Starting January 23rd. Tune into Carmichael, Dave, and Jason Ross from 6 a.m. to 11 a.m. Followed by the return of Deuce and Mo.
Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Followed by Cattles and Robbie from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. You wanted more local? We're giving you more local on Sacktown Sports. Your local sports leader. One brings Maklof magic, while the other, we're still trying to figure that out.
Cattles and Rami.
Sacktown Sports.
A few random observations from the YouTube people. First of all, Tony Dogs wants to know if Simone is wearing the same flannel shirt she was wearing a day ago.
You can wear a flannel on multiple
Absolutely
days.
Absolutely not. I was wearing a King sweater yesterday. Trash take.
Ooh. Simone ain't having it, Tony. Step back. Step back.
Better have your facts straight. But I mean, what if she was? You can wear a flannel a couple days a week, can't you? Same flannel? If you're just wearing it as like an outer thing because you're chilly?
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
Absolutely.
I wear the same zip-up hoodie almost every day.
Fact.
Different one today, but most days.
Wouldn't regard you as a fashion icon, though, Rami.
Says you. And your green pants. Get out of
here. Oh, they're mint. They're mint.
You see the button-up he's wearing today?
I didn't.
I'm literally right behind you.
It's right there.
Hi.
Oh, look at that.
Hi.
How are you doing,
Kyle? They match the pistachio-colored pants.
How are things?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Thank you, Rami.
Are you rocking the whole pistachio fit? Like top to bottom? Oh, you do have the pistachio. See, Tony Dogs, that's who you should be calling out.
He can't see me. Do you want me to come in here and show him?
Pants
no.
You wore 2 days ago.
Yeah, walk in here right now.
Oh my god!
You'll see these Tony Dogs and other people on YouTube right behind. Watch this color walk right in behind Rami.
Bam!
No, they could see you. They could see you in Rami's camera.
Yeah.
Trust me when I tell you, they can see. Look at those things.
What is happening?
What is happening?
We don't even want to talk about the shoes.
Oh, you got shoes?
Oh my goodness.
No, those are terrible. Oh,
to be young. God. To be young and stylish.
Oh, they're great.
So there you have it. There you have it.
Those are god awful
shoes. Kyle Ledbetter, ladies and gentlemen.
Fashion icon.
Mr. All Red Everything says keep him in the back. I agree. Keep him in the back. Hey, did you see Domas and Fox were on Slam Magazine?
I did.
What'd you think of the cover? It says, "We Up," and then it has a purple beam separating Domas and Fox on the cover.
I liked it, but our guy Chris Watkins, he said he pointed out they missed a golden opportunity. Why not beam me up? If you're going to put
instead
a beam.
Instead of like, "We Up," just
beam me up.
Or beam us up?
Beam us up. Or
beam me
up,
Buttercup.
You can't say beam me up, right? Because, I mean, I guess you could. I feel like us is more together.
Beam us up.
Singular.
Or just beam up.
Beam up. Okay.
Why we up?
So Chris Watkins.
I know I'm not the hippest.
Kings fans have been upset that, you know, there hasn't been much pub about this team over the past, you know, decade and a half. So they get Slam Magazine's cover. And Watkins is now upset because they used we up instead
because
of beam
because their headline wasn't clever enough. Yes.
Is Chris Watkins ever going to be happy is my question.
Probably not.
He's a Vikings fan, so.
Charles Watkins?
By choice,
wow.
Too. He's not even from Minnesota, by choice.
That was unwarranted. That was totally unwarranted.
Was it untrue?
Not untrue, just unwarranted.
All right, we'll get to Fox's night in a minute, but first, DK wants to talk about the Kings. What's up, DK?
In the moment that we were watching last night when they were announcing the team and, you know, you're starting five and the guys just seemed off. It just looked like they were wiping sleep from their eyes. It looked like they were, you know, like just like the malaise had set in between the win, the emotional win on Monday and Wednesday. And it just never connected. They were bouncing balls off their feet. They couldn't catch passes. Things that seemed to be slipping out of Domas's hands and looking down going, where was that? Just the whole night just seemed really, really off.
It was, DK. Thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it, buddy, and thanks for listening. It was an off night. There's no doubt. No pun intended with Davion. But, you know, you are apt to have some of those off nights. You play 82 games a year. I'm not going to, and I don't think DK was doing this in any kind of manner, but it's not to excuse it. It's just it was an off night. The guys looked like they were completely and utterly out of it, including De'Aaron Fox. Fox had a weird night, man. He took only 4 shots in the first half. Now, some of this could be hindsight because this has happened before. This has happened recently where Foxy takes 5 or 6 shots in the first half, but the Kings are winning, so nobody's talking about it.
And then he goes off and has 15, 16 shot attempts in the second half.
He only had 12 shots last night. 4 shots in the first half, 12 shots total. And he wasn't aggressive. And I'll always talk about, you know, free throws with De'Aaron. And he had 1 free throw last night. Now, I do think a lot of that was what Toronto did defensively, right? They were clogging the lanes.
Yeah.
Their hands were busy. They were playing physical against Foxy when he had the basketball. And so you can explain some of that. But Rami, this guy is at least your second best player. Some people might take him over Domas. I would not. But he's at least your second best player on the team. And last night, I know plus minus can be a little funky and clunky as a statistic, but last night Fox was a minus 30 in that game. You were outscored by 30 points when Fox was on the floor.
Minus 30?
Minus 30.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. And I'm fact-checking Nick Cattles. You don't have to do it out there in Sacktown Sportsland. He's
well, not
right.
This time.
Minus 30.
Minus 30 last night.
Now, that's when it's that bad, Nick, you can put it's one of those numbers where we can debate how much stock to put in it. But when it's that bad, when the discrepancy is that big, there's no not putting stock in that number. And you got to be better when your best player is on the floor. He has to be better. And as a unit, they need to be operating better when De'Aaron Fox is on the floor than to be minus 30. I didn't notice that until you just pointed it out. That's ridiculous.
Here's the question I have, and I know we'll dive into this a little bit later on about how the Kings can counter some of the stuff that we saw last night. But when you don't have Domas rolling, Rami, they've got to figure out what to do offensively. And to me, last night watching the game, it was almost as if Fox didn't really know what he was supposed to do when the usual plan was not effective. You know, it's usually, hey, we're going to kick it to Domas. We're gonna work action off of him. He's going to control it at the elbow or beyond the break. He's going to, you know, he's going to do the dribble handoff stuff at the top, all those things. When that's not working, it almost seemed like there was offensive confusion. And Foxy was kind of like, all right, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to just drive into traffic? Am I supposed to just dribble the basketball a ton? What are we doing here? And how do I find that comfort? And I just feel like, just like the rest of the team last night, Fox never truly played comfortable.
And usually, and maybe this is why they're as good as they are, Nick. And I don't want to take all the air out of the Kings balloon. It's one loss. They're still the 3 seed. There's still 7 games over .500 and winners of 7 of their last 9. But I'm not ready yet. I don't think you're ready yet. I don't think most people who watch the NBA are ready yet to put them in the conversation for a championship, because when you have an elite player and what you're talking about happens, that guy just goes, all right, guess I got to do this myself. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And whatever it is that they excel at, and with De'Aaron Fox, it would be his speed. They would just use that to either beat or at least soften up the other team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it felt
and,
to me.
And
felt,
just be aggressive and go right into it. And if nothing else, get to the foul line.
Yeah.
You know, or make them think twice about their strategy.
It felt to me like Fox was in between, like asking himself the question, should I try to take control or not?
Yeah,
like, should
just I, take
should,
it over.
Like, should I try to take over this game? Should I be just uber aggressive? And then I think when he tried to be aggressive at times, he ran into traffic, he turned the ball over, and that made him hesitant. So it was like, hey, man, I can't win. Like, the offense is not clicking tonight. We're not running things through Domas well. I'm trying to take over the game the best I can, but this team is long. They're athletic. Their pickup point on defense is very high. They're putting pressure on me. And every time I try to do something aggressively, it backfires. So I thought he was just really stuck in the middle last night, trying to figure out, you know, what he wanted to be, so to speak, and how he wanted to try to change things, because he knew, everybody knew, watching that game, this is not working. And so how do they deal with that? How do they find that second level of offense when Domas is struggling as badly as he did last night? What can Fox do? What can the other guys do? Again, we'll talk more in depth about that later on in the show, but I find it interesting to see Foxy kind of go through it while you're watching that game. It's 2:24 on this Thursday. Time check brought to you by West Coast Men's Health Acoustic Wave Therapy. We'll continue with your thoughts on the Kings. Also, everyone wants to tell you that they saw the Niners' next big thing coming. That's next.
Cattles and Rami.
Sacktown Sports. The only place you'll find Keegan Murray is Sacktown Sports.
Out to Keegan Murray. Straight away for three, and Keegan knocks down the triple.
Hey, Sacramento. It's Keegan Murray, and you're listening to the home of Sacramento Kings, Sacktown Sports.
Your local sports leader.
With you 1 mile at a time during the afternoon drive. Cattles and Robbie.
Sacktown Sports.
Rami, we are witnessing the Brock Purdy revelations, my friend. Brock Purdy fever is flying all over the place.
Hot.
Hot.
It's hot. Fever, the Purdy fever is hot.
It's hot. So hot.
Buddy, is it hot.
And I love this.
Purdy.
I love when...
I love looking across the glass when Deuce and Moe brought up that he's top five in the Rookie of the Year voting, and you just seething. You're just seething and nodding your head like, yes, that does make me mad.
No, Deuce was like, I could imagine that makes cattles mad or whatever. And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know if mad's the right word. It's more just like...
Both frustrated and angry.
Like, annoyed?
Annoyed.
Okay.
35% of the games. The dude played 35% of the games. Are we going to name an NBA Rookie of the Year off 27 games?
He's the Rookie of the Year, man.
Joel Embiid finished second with 31 games.
NBA, and it was ridiculous then.
If you were going to say it was a regular season and postseason award, I might. Okay, maybe. Maybe. He had a really good game against Seattle. The numbers look good at the end of the day. But it's just a regular season award, and no, you can't. You can't.
Let's name an MVP for a guy who played under 30 games in the NBA. NBA MVP for a dude who played literally 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's to me, it's just kind of simple.
It doesn't make any sense.
Like, sample size matters when you're giving a yearly award.
Right.
So it is what it is. But so people are going to look at Brock, and, you know, there are going to be many people who are going to try to jump on that gravy train, right? They're going to try to jump on the story. Oh, we knew that Brock Purdy was something special. Even though the guy was drafted last in the draft, there are going to be a lot of people out there go, oh, we just knew, right?
I believe they call that the LeBron.
The LeBron. Is that what it is?
The old, yeah, I knew. I knew that was going to happen. LeBron
it's
is
a,
happening.
It's a trend on
that.
The internet, yes.
Just knew. So we've heard some of that this week. Let's start with Deebo Samuel, who talked about Purdy with the media.
I kind of like say this all the time, but I go back to preseason against Houston. He just have this attitude and this competitive edge of himself. It's like, he don't care if he mess up. If he do it, he's going to do it full speed, and then we'll talk about it at the end of the day. But just how I've seen him grow throughout the whole year, from getting zero snaps to being a starter of this team. And, you know, with the guys that we have around him, you know, like from our guy, you know, Trent, being the leader that he are, and everybody else just honing around him, just giving him confidence to be who we need him to be.
So Deebo, to me, that's just teammate speak, right?
You think that's tempered when he says, I knew in the preseason, by his swagger?
Look,
I feel like that's revisionist history.
Oh, it
me.
Is. It's,
okay.
It's going above and beyond the teammate speak. Like the guys in the locker room, when they talk to the media, of course they're going to say, oh, yeah, I knew Purdy was, you know, good. I knew he was ready. I knew this. And the hyperbole is going to inevitably start playing a role, like I
sure.
said, weeks ago.
Yeah.
Whether it's in the locker room or the national media, because people can't help themselves. Because
I was here in the preseason. I don't remember Deebo.
You don't remember Deebo going, Brock Purdy's the guy?
I don't remember Deebo going to microphones and going, this Deebo kid or this Brock kid, he might be something. I don't remember that ever happening.
Y'all talking about Mahomes. I got one name for you, Brock Purdy.
It's not a play thing.
Like,
that
know,
never happened. I don't think that ever happened.
We did not hear a lot of that from his teammates.
No, you didn't.
Before he was forced into
no,
action.
No, you did not.
Then we had Nick Sirianni, head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, being asked about Brock.
What did you know about Purdy before he came across your screen this week?
Just that he's a winner. Obviously, I always follow Iowa State and their program because I have so many college teammates and roommates that coach there. You saw what he did for that program, right? Matt's obviously a great head coach, but he got a great quarterback in Brock Purdy. And you saw what, I checked the score, Purdy had an awesome game, and they won again. And that's what I noticed, you know, with him, that he's a winner.
I feel like Sirianni is trying to respect the opponent, and he's trying to be respectful of Purdy. But he's also not, he's not going too far. Because when you, like, to me, it's just like when you say, oh, he's a winner. Like, play that one more time. Listen to Sirianni carefully about what he says about Purdy.
What did you know about Purdy before he came across your screen this week?
Just that he's a winner. Obviously, I always follow Iowa State and their program because I have so many college teammates and roommates that coach there. You saw what he did for that program, right? Matt's obviously a great head coach, but he got a great quarterback in Brock Purdy. And you saw what, I checked the score, Purdy had an awesome game, and they won again. And that's what I noticed, you know, with him, that he's a winner.
He did say, you know,
he's a great quarterback.
He did say great quarterback. Again, look.
And he knew that at Iowa State because of what he did for that program.
Being a great quarterback in college does not necessarily mean you're going to be a great quarterback as a pro. Hello, Tim Tebow. Like, you know, there are levels. There are levels to this. But he called him a winner twice. When I hear a coach call a player a winner, like he didn't spell out like, oh, he's got great athleticism. He's got a great arm. He's a big talent. He's a winner. That's the way you can compliment somebody without necessarily talking about how individually great they are. He's a winner. He wins games. Okay, teams win games. Great. he wins games. That the program was successful when he was the quarterback. Awesome. There's lots of winning teams in college football with quarterbacks. So, yeah, he is a winner. Here's what I would say. There's one person, Rami. There's actually two people. There are two people that can tell me they knew that Brock Purdy was good and that he was good enough to be an NFL quarterback.
Who are those two people?
John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. Because they kept him on the roster.
I mean, there is that they kept him on the roster.
That's it.
There is that.
But he was the third quarterback. You don't have to keep a third quarterback on the roster. They started the year with Lance and Jimmy G.
And if I had told you Jimmy G was going to eventually end up on the depth chart, you would have probably thought Brock Purdy at best was a practice squad quarterback, right? Because they had just given $2 million+ to Nate Sudfeld to come in,
right,
and be the backup. Yep. So he was starting. He came to camp basically as the fourth quarterback. If I told you Jimmy G was legitimately in the mix, I think John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan at best thought they had a practice squad guy who they could develop into a reliable backup.
Yeah.
I think that's at best they thought they had in a Brock Purdy.
Nobody drafts the guy last in the draft, okay? When you get to the sixth, seventh round, even in most cases the fifth round, we're talking about a lot of scratch tickets. Sixth, seventh round picks are scratch tickets. They're guys that probably won't make the team, likely practice squad guys. So, yes, John Lynch, if Lynch and Shanahan thought Purdy was good enough to start NFL games,
they would have taken him in the third round.
He would have been
the
gone,
latest.
Fourth round. So, like, they probably saw him. They saw him and said, okay, he can process information well. He's pretty accurate. Seems like a smart guy. Somebody we could work with. But then again, when the camp started, they made the decision to get rid of Sudfeld and keep Purdy. So Lynch and Shanahan have all the right in the world to say we believed in this guy going back to camp because their actions proved it. Other people, I mean, they're being nice. They want to be part of the bandwagon. They're being good teammates. They're trying to respect the opponent. Lynch and Shanahan have a right to throw somewhat of a parade right now and say,
sure,
we kept this guy on the roster, and because we did and we made that decision, we have a chance to get to the Super Bowl.
Give themselves the old pat on the back.
Because who knows if Sudfeld is making this run, right? So Lynch and Shanahan.
I highly doubt Nate Sudfeld is making this run.
You never know.
I mean, I don't ever know, but I highly doubt.
I mean, how dare you? By the way, all guests come to you from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda.
Your one-stop Honda shop.
Felt like I was late. I was going to.
You guys never said anything. That's not even late. That's just not there.
We
just
weren't ready absent for it. We weren't ready.
It's like Simone.
And we should be. I was like absent, fully reclined in my seat. I tried to get up. I sang it with you from in here, so just know that.
She was just enjoying the show, man.
I would reenact Simone, but it's a bad back day, so I don't want to throw my back out doing so. I love Simone's like, I was late. No. It's like, Simone, you want to go out tonight? And she just doesn't show up. Sorry, I was late. No, wait, you just didn't show up.
Totally.
You weren't there. Like, that's not how this works. I'm confused.
Yeah, there's a difference between late and absent. There's tardy and then there's absent.
Rami, has the Cattle's curse been replaced by the curse of the cardigan? Talk about that more next.
Live and local in the afternoon.
They always keep you on edge.
Cattle's
and Rami
on Sacktown Sports.
It is 2:44 on this Thursday. Time check brought to you by West Coast Men's Health Acoustic Wave Therapy. So, Rami, do you believe in curses? Do you believe in bad juju? Do you believe in...
Not so much.
Karma?
No. Karma, I believe in.
Karma, you're
karma,
into.
I do believe in. Okay. That what you put out there will come back. But curses and whatnot, no, not really.
All right, so we'll go with karma.
Yes.
The Grizzlies lost last night to Golden State, dramatic fashion, 122-120. And we take you back to just before Christmas when Ja Morant was sitting down with Malika Andrews of ESPN and was asked this question.
Who do you look at around the league as you're studying and say, we're going to have to run through them?
Celtics.
No one in the West.
Nah, I'm fine in the West.
I'm fine in the West. No worries.
Huh.
Just, you know, an easy walkthrough when it comes to the Western
Conference. Just breezing through the West.
I don't.
You better bring it.
Have absolutely zero concern about the Western Conference.
Walk in the garden.
Since then, the Grizzlies have gone 7-7 against the Western Conference. 500 against that conference.
I don't think that's so much a curse or anything cosmic, Nick, as...
You don't do that. That's karma.
I think it's a lot of teams just going, oh, you thought this was going to be easy. I think you put a target on your back when you say stuff like that. And I said before, I love the trash talk. I love back and forth. I love drama. I love pettiness. It gives sports a little bit of of storyline, a little more meat on the bone for what we do and us as fans. But you also, when you say stuff like that, that's a bold statement, man. You put a target on your back.
7-7. And, you know, the Grizzlies, they have not been good on the road. Again, they lose on the road last night. That's a problem. We talked about that before the game on Monday night, that Ja had come out and talked about how we've got to be better on the road than we've been. They're 11-14 on the road. And they had just won 11 in a row. Now they've lost 4 in a row. At home, Memphis is 20-3 at home.
That's really good.
So
can't do it.
Their home play is carrying them this season. 11-14 on the road. Another loss last night, this time to Golden State. You might not believe in curses, but maybe I'll change your mind with this. The curse of the cardigan. How do we like it? Do we like it? Is that a t-shirt?
It's catchy.
We like it.
It's catchy.
I told you, I make t-shirts.
And I mean, you have ideas for t-shirts.
A cartoon.
I'm yet to see one of them actually be.
I ain't got the time, Rami. If I had the time, I'd be printing these puppies. Right. I could see the caricature, the cartoon caricature of Shannon Sharp in the cardigan and just the curse of the cardigan on it.
Looking back over his shoulder.
Ever since Shannon Sharp said that Memphis didn't want that bleeping smoke.
They're 0-4.
The Grizzlies are 0-4. They have not won a game since Sharp gave the business to Dylan Brooks and company.
Hey, he might have just demoralized them. He might have just put them in their place and made them feel small. You
had
know
nothing
what I mean?
To do with Ja Morant and Steven Adams being out.
No.
Ja played last night.
Yeah, Ja did play last night.
Ja missed, I think, one game. The only game he missed was the Kings game, I think.
This is true.
Yeah, the Morants, man. Ever since Sharp got in the face of the Morants. Which, by the way, apparently after the third quarter, Shannon Sharp, like, hugged T. Morant and they made up.
They hugged it out.
It's a pretty quick makeup.
Why don't you like when people reconcile?
I'm just saying, if I was that hot, I don't know if like 20 minutes later I'd be like, no, we good. I might take a day or two if I'm like that hot. Like publicly that hot.
We didn't really talk about
it. Have you ever like in public been that hot at somebody and then like 20 minutes later, no, we good.
Why was
it's not like they're best friends or brothers. Like if it's a best friend or a brother or something, somebody you know, maybe.
Yeah, right. Oh, like, yeah, no, I could be cool.
Have you ever been hot at a complete stranger and then 20 minutes later feel the need to go walk up and hug and say sorry?
No, never.
No.
Why was Shannon Sharp allowed back in the game?
Well, he never left. I mean, they just kind of
He was taken in the back by security. Why was he allowed back to his seat?
And maybe that's why he had to reconcile.
You get that Will Smith treatment.
I was just going to say, I said the same thing when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock. How are you just allowed to go back to your seat?
Well, because he was about to get the award for best actor.
Oh. So what? He just assaulted a man on national TV.
Technically, it wasn't on TV. They edited it out, but not on Australian TV.
Oh, my God. He's going to stay there. We got to give him
his
award.
Yeah, security's like, he's good.
He got to shank Chris Rock and be like, hey, he's got the award coming up. He stabbed the guy. Doesn't matter. Tick tock. We got a big award coming.
He's a nominee. What are we going
to
do?
They're like, Denzel Washington talked to him. Okay.
Okay, he's
all
fine.
Right, good.
And Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper, of course. Bradley Cooper.
What a time. What a time.
Interject himself into that conversation. So, again, the Grizzlies, 0-4 since the cardigan popped up. And this is great news for the Kings because the Kings, they stay within 3.5 games of the 2 seed. And if you look around, Rami, if you look around the Western Conference, the teams that are surrounding the Kings, they keep losing. The Grizz have lost 4 straight. The Pelicans have lost 6 straight. The Mavericks, in their last 10 games, they're 3-7.
Yeah, and you look at it, you look at that home and away record for the Grizzlies, Nick, and I know that the Kings' home record ain't great, so I don't know how much home court advantage will help them unless they figure that out between now and the end of the season. But with Steven Adams being out a few weeks and the Grizzlies sort of reeling here, I know the Kings are coming off a really bad loss, but again, still winners of seven of their last nine, and with kind of an easy schedule in the back half compared to a lot of the NBA, an opportunity to gain some ground and maybe wrestle that two seed away from Memphis between now and the end of the season and take away any home court advantage that they might have. You said they're 20-3 in Memphis?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want them having home court advantage in a series.
20-3. Cattles and Rami here on Sacktown Sports. One more thing I want to get to here. So Jim Boeheim, he's a really polarizing guy. Syracuse fans love him. He is adored, and a lot of people nationally, when they talk college basketball, Jim Boeheim is one of the giants of college basketball. But this dude consistently has treated college students like trash.
College journalists.
When he's at media appearances, when he's dealing with the media, when he has a college reporter ask him a question, this has happened way too many times over the past decade, two decades.
40 years at that job.
Jim Boeheim will publicly undress or react ridiculously to a student's question. It happens. It almost feels like it happens at least once a year.
Yeah.
I don't know why he feels like he needs to be a dink with college students who are just trying to ask him questions and try to learn how to be a journalist. You would think somebody
not
who
even bad questions.
No, and you a would lot of the time. You would think somebody who coaches college athletes and college students might be a little bit more open minded to the development of college students, but it happened again this week with Jim Boeheim.
It's the second game you lost by 4 points in the span of 8 days. Why can't your team close out big games?
We're done.
That's it. We're done. Mic down. Walks out.
What's so bad about that question?
You've lost 2 games within 4 points, those 2 games each, and it seems like you're having some trouble closing games. What's going on? Completely fair question.
That's a very fair question.
He does not do that. Jim Boeheim does not do that if that's Seth Davis, Jay Billis, somebody nationally, somebody who's, you know, been doing the job for a few years. He doesn't do that to anybody. He does it to the college student because he knows that he can play the power game to the college student. And walks out.
I was going to say, is this him just not respecting this, I'm going to say kid because he's a college student. Is this him just not respecting this kid because he's a student journalist? Or is this just Jim Boeheim? Because, you know, Nick, I'm not that into the college basketball. Is he just a kind of a jerk in general? But you're saying he doesn't do this to other reporters, to established reporters and professional reporters.
From a national standpoint, look, in-game coaches can always kind of be cranky, right? But I would say overall, nationally speaking, Boeheim will come across as affable with the respected journalists and people who cover him. And March, you know, the March Madness tournament, when they have Boeheim involved, they talk to him. It's much better. He's kind of like he's somewhat of a happy Boeheim.
Does he think that the school paper or school radio station or TV, I don't know who this guy was working for, like they're supposed to be propaganda? Like, how dare you challenge me? You're supposed to be here to prop me up as a great coach.
I mean, you're asking me to crawl into the mind of Jim Boeheim, which I can't do. I don't know why he does it, but this is something he has always done.
I don't like
so,
him.
So whatever it is, whether it's he doesn't respect the people asking the questions because they're young and he knows more basketball than they'll ever know. He forgot more basketball than they'll ever learn or whatever it is. Maybe he gets his jollies of the power trip that he can pull on people that are below him, right? That are underneath the great Jim Boeheim. But he has consistently done this throughout his career. Mm. And he's been called out on
it. He's a bully.
And he couldn't care less.
So you're saying he's a bully.
He couldn't care less when it comes to, you know, dealing with college students asking him questions. And look, he gets asked a lot of questions. He doesn't do it every time. But this is a common theme with Boeheim. He's known to do this. All right, coming up, did the Raptors show the rest of the league a blueprint to slow down this Kings offense?